Hello and welcome to Wheelhouse Arts Art by Volume, presented by The Wine Room by J. Bell Wine Co., the 100 proof podcast that highlights the vibrant voices of Louisville's creative community. I'm your host, Robin Elise Gibson, aka RAG or RAG, if you feel so inclined, and this series shines a spotlight on the diverse range of creatives and aficionados from our beautiful visual arts community. From emerging artists and seasoned curators to passionate collectors and innovative designers, each episode explores the unique journey, insights, and stories that define their craft. In this episode, I'm speaking to Leisha Priest, local artist specializing in paper toll. We discuss her process, work-life balance, African influences, and her show, I Am We, on view now at the Kentucky Museum of Arts and Crafts. Every conversation is paired with a thoughtfully curated drink from our sponsor and neighbor, The Wine Room by J. Bell Wine Co., reflecting the artful vibe of the discussions. This episode features The Wine Room's first wine pick of the season, a 2022 Viognier from J. Bell Wine Co., which I'll be enjoying. They've also included a specially crafted grapefruit daiquiri mocktail for my special guest to savor during our conversation. This 2022 Viognier from Olson Vineyards in Washington State is a bright, expressive white wine that showcases the purity of fruit and varietal character typical for the region's warm climate whites. Fermented and aged entirely in stainless steel, this wine highlights fresh, vibrant aromatics and a clean, crisp palate. On the nose, it opens with delicate floral notes and a burst of ripe orchard fruit, particularly white peach and pear. These primary aromas carry seamlessly onto the palate, where the wine's juicy stone fruit core is balanced by a subtle mineral edge and lively acidity. The stainless steel aging preserves its freshness, allowing the fruit to shine without any oak influence. The mouthfeel is smooth and supple, the medium body that lingers gracefully through the finish. This Viognier is a true expression of its varietal, fruity yet refined, with a precision that speaks through the quality of Washington State vineyards. It pairs beautifully with light seafood dishes, grilled chicken, or fresh cheeses, and also stands confidently on its own as a refreshing aperitif. Approachable and aromatic, this vintage is a great introduction to Viognier's potential when crafted in stainless steel style. The Grapefruit Daiquiri Mocktail is a bold and refreshing, non-alcoholic twist on a classic cocktail, perfect for those seeking a vibrant, citrus-forward experience without the booze. This mocktail highlights the natural tartness and complexity of fresh grapefruit juice, balanced by the zesty brightness of Persian lime and the sweet, slightly floral notes of blood orange. The result is a dynamic interplay of sweet, sour, and mildly bitter flavors that awaken the palate and offer a satisfying, grown-up alternative to traditional cocktails. ABV is more than just a podcast. It's a celebration of creativity, expression, and the art that connects us all. So, grab a glass and tune in as we turn up the volume on the conversations that matter in the art world. Okay. Thank you, Leisha Priest, for agreeing to do this show with us. This is Art by Volume, and this is our first episode here at Wheelhouse, is where we're recording.
Thank you for having me.
So I've known you for quite a while now. You're my art professor's wife, and I remember the first time we met is when we went on that trip to New York. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, like, you having such a commanding presence. Mm-hmm. And you just being this, like, this tall, just, like, kind of regal woman who walks through space and just owns it. And I just thought, yeah. Wow, that's awesome.
Well, I viewed everybody like my children. Mm-hmm. You all became my children. So I was thinking more in mommy mode instead of regal. But thank you.
Also good. I guess I also think of my mom as sort of that sort of figure in many ways. So maybe that's also what I was picking up. Uh-huh. But thank you. You want to start out by just kind of talking a little bit about your show that's up now at KMAC?
Okay. How it came about?
Yes. Yes.
So I was in a group exhibition of African-American artists that was across the street at Susan Moorman's gallery. And then she organized a kind of meet and greet of these artists, because a lot of times there's this disconnect and we don't really get to know each other. We're so busy in our practices. And so we met at KMAC, and then Joey, who is the curator there, said if anyone would like a studio visit, to let him know. And so as it was over, I asked for that. And then I asked about how you can get supported by a nonprofit, because that was one of the things that was discussed, and I didn't know what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. And so he asked me if I would be interested in doing a residency there. And okay. So that's how the residency culminated in a solo show on the third floor.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Because I remember going to that show and seeing your work in that the Susan Moorman show. And I think that was the first time I'd seen your work in person. And was the woman with the baby and the cell mm-hmm. phone in it? Because mm-hmm. I remember that image mm-hmm. and it stuck with me.
Okay.
And I just thought, wow, this was already vibrant. And I was just so impressed by the intricacy of the work, the layering.
Thank you.
And I, yeah, so being able to see that and to know that thread of how you've come into the KMAC is, I'm glad to kind of have those points of connection. Mm-hmm. Maybe It's Fate is a member-owned cooperative located in Butchertown near downtown Louisville. The co-op offers public art exhibitions and a member-based salon-like social club for working, playing, gathering, healing, performing, and connecting. Members can reserve rooms or just show up. Witness gatherings that range from board games to board meetings, from bands performing music to yoga instruction, acting classes, spiritual gatherings, potlucks, and more. Maybe It's Fate is a co-op on a mission to grow and sustain a home for Louisville's subcultures and fringe communities, while generating a new for-profit model built around resilience, where the community owns the property of its own community center. Read their white paper or discover upcoming events at the co-op by visiting maybeitsfate.com, and consider becoming a member for $19 a month or pay what you can. Natalie O Design is a full-service studio that offers a highly developed suite of expertise and services specializing in residential remodels, new construction, and commercial projects. They approach each project holistically and with keen attention to artful details. Their team will be beside you from start to finish, from selecting your build team to choosing tailor-made finishing touches. At Natalie O Design, they lead with craft and innovation. For two decades, their team has pushed boundaries and norms within commercial, hospitality, and residential interior projects, challenging conventions with their embrace of adaptive reuse and in-house designed furniture, lighting, art, textiles, and tile. They think globally, with references informed by international travel, food culture, and art, while acting locally with headquarters in Louisville, Kentucky. They are a proud megaphone for local and regional creative talent, makers and artists with whom they collaborate to create spaces that are notable for their eclecticism, warmth, and soul. Allow them to bring your vision to light. One of the things that's so apparent when I walked in, like my first impression was literally like, these things are coming off the wall. Mm-hmm. And to see how dynamic that was and to, you know, feel the movement and the motion before I even walked in the room. And then the next thing that hit me was the color. And so would you talk a little bit more about like your process and how you build up form? Through your process, and we can also talk about your color choices as well.
Okay. So what's interesting is ever since I got involved in the fibers department at U of L, because I ended up going to U of L because I wanted to design clothing, which I actually was already doing, but I felt like I needed a degree behind me to validify what I was doing. But I ended up switching to the sculpture department. And everything, because I didn't want to do what my teacher, who I wish I could talk to her now, she's since fell asleep in death. Her name was Lida Gordon. She wanted me to do all these little studies, and I like working big. Mm-hmm. And so I would not do the little studies. I just wouldn't do them. So I went over to sculpture and became a sculpture major and did these things that were always on the wall but coming off the wall. I used found objects like doors and did a series of pieces with doors that hung on the wall, but they protruded. So they were high relief sculptures. And so over time, I've come back to doing exactly the same thing with just a different material, because I was working abstractly when I started doing the sculpture. So, for instance, like the piece that you see here on the table, the process that I'm using is called paper toll. The origin of that is that back in the Depression, people didn't have many images that they sent out on holidays and cards, so they would, everybody ended up getting the same image. And so some individuals took those images and created dimensional pieces with them because they had so many of the same image. So in the 70s, I got some sets that my mother purchased, and I put those together. You cut them out layer by layer, creating dimension by cutting away what's in the back. And I found them in 2012, and I thought this would be a nice thing to include in my practice. At that time, I was working with glass and reverse painting on glass and taking a slick surface and creating tactile surfaces that are visually, you know, tactile.
Right.
You can't touch them because you're dealing with slick glass. But I started working with layers of glass.
Right.
So it's always been throughout my work, I've worked with layers.
Right.
Then just because of my living circumstances, working with glass became a challenge. And so I started working with the paper and photography that I had taken in Zimbabwe and Africa, and incorporating all of that into my practice, and now including paint as well. I've always been drawn by vibrant colors. And if we were going to ask what color I am influenced by or drawn to, besides just saying bright colors, a lot of the things I see in African art, particularly in Zimbabwe, for instance, they have homes that in South Africa, there's a people called the Ndebele people who have their homes covered with geometric patterns, as well as their beadwork and their blankets and their clothing. There are all these really rich, vibrant colors, and right. those things are what attracts me as well.
Yes, and I know you took at least one trip to Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. How many trips have you been on to Africa so far?
So we've been to Zimbabwe twice, okay. and then in 1988, I went to Cote d'Ivoire and Mali. I went through Parsons School of Design,
okay.
and so that was my introduction to Africa. And then we went to a small country in northern Africa that's right next to Morocco when Mark and I got married. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. I was also was your initial motivation to just take those trips to Africa like academic, or was there something else that kind of sparked that for you?
Well, it's a plethora of things. I mean, one being that I am a person of color and wanting to know more about where I came from, mm-hmm. but not really being able to find out exactly because of the diaspora and being kind of stolen away from somewhere. So I know it was Africa, so I wanted to go and try to connect in whatever way I could and do still continue to want to connect with every aspect that I can of the 54 countries that are in Africa, because there are some similarities, but a lot of differences. And it's all quite beautiful. It's such a large continent.
Yeah.
So that being the number one thing, but also, as I mentioned, the art there draws me. And so I was still a fibers major. I mentioned I went to sculpture, but I still was fibers major as well as a double major. Actually went to triple major because I did painting too. And that's how I met Mark. But being that I love fibers, I wanted to go over there and make some connections with the fashion design that I was doing then. And so I went through Parsons School of Design and studying weaving on strip loom mm-hmm. and paste resist and other dyeing methods of fabrics and things like that. So that was the impetus that for with me going to Parsons originally. And then after that, I wanted to go back, just wanted to go back.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you were into fashion. Mm-hmm. You do have a very distinct style that I do like, but I didn't know that you were a designer.
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind talking a little bit about that? Is that something that you still kind of feel a passion for, or is that something that's just kind of all the way gone to the wayside?
No, it's not gone to the wayside, but it's expressing itself in a different way.
Yes.
So when I was young, my mother bought me a sewing machine when I was probably 12 or something like that. I was so excited about the sewing machine. I hadn't had any instruction. And I start spinning the thread on the bobbin by hand, which means the tension is not going to be right. You can't use it. But I was so excited about learning. So she got me a class and I started sewing and having a new outfit on every day for school. I would sew by the light of the sewing machine because my mother would not allow me to have the light on at night. So they didn't know. I would close my door, turn off that light, and you know, there's a little light on the sewing machine because I was gonna wear something different every day. Now, I went to Sacred Heart for the majority of my schooling. So I had to wear a uniform.
Okay.
So then I finished out in public school because I didn't want to wear a uniform. And so I had to have a new outfit every day. And so that's what I did. So then as I got older, I started doing one-of-a-kind beaded and hand-painted dresses and wedding gowns. And now, beading and all this meticulous work that you do using specific, I used a lot of Alençon lace and hand sewed it on and all of that. And then painting on the fabrics and using cloisonné beads. I did all of that. And so then when I've come back to doing these sculptural paintings, now I am engulfing these figures with clothing that is made of flowers. And I'm using a lot of straight pens, like I would when I was cutting out patterns and whatnot and putting them on, you know, my mannequin. And so in that way, I mean, I am very connected to the designing of clothing, but now I'm designing with flowers or with beads that are making the garments.
Right.
And so I do enjoy that. So I decided to start leaving those straight pins in the pieces so you could just even see that part of the process.
Yes. We met at your show, but I did get there a little early just so I could do a walkthrough. And one of the things that I liked and was excited about was just the form of these garments that would be on your figures. And it felt like you already build up, you know, with these flowers and even just with the images themselves, right? But there's something very, I don't know how to say it, but it makes it feel like I'm in their space, like they're occupying those clothes and they're actually in the middle of taking a step, or, and just the way that it fits around the figure feels like there's a figure inside of there.
Good.
And it's really exciting to see, especially up close, because it's obvious that you have a knowledge and sensitivity toward how things are supposed to, you know, drape over the body. And so, and a knowledge of anatomy, what leg is going to be in front and, mm-hmm. you know, how that works. So it really does come across.
Okay.
And so it completely makes sense that you have this fashion background mm-hmm. to kind of help boost that. And you can also tell the passion that you have for it. And there's that one piece that, where you're using the multiple people and the beading and in the squares that's on the actual dress pattern, that's very much, it felt like, that felt like something I would see like on a mannequin that someone had designed.
Right.
It was very elegant, and I don't know. My mom's also a seamstress, so we have a bunch of dress forms in the house, and it feels like something she would have, you know, displayed very prominently for people to see when they walk into her, like, space.
I need to meet your mom.
Yes, you do. I think you guys would have a lot to talk about.
And that piece is I Am We, the one that you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was fun to make. I've not done any self-portraits, and so that's my first self-portrait, and I'm going to do some more. That one could be so much more. On some of my pieces, I use pictures of individuals like I Am We, that one that's in the exhibition.
Yeah.
It's a conglomeration of pictures of people that came into my studio, as well as the front part of the dress. They're 1/8-inch images of people that have been a part of my life over the years. So there's hundreds of different images. There's mm-hmm. a lot of repeating images, but there's hundreds of images of people that are on there. And people like seeing themselves. And so people have come in wanting to know where they are. And I do want them to know where they are, you know, because they are in my life. And that's why I entitled that piece, I Am We.
Right.
Because we are the amalgamation of all the experiences that we've had and all the people that have come in our lives. We are not some unique thing that came about just by ourselves without anyone.
Right.
You know, and so that's what I want to say with that piece.
Thank you.
Yeah. This is really good. And you know what's interesting? You're talking about creating form and knowing form and understanding anatomy. Well, my last pieces that I worked on in glass was a whole series on anatomy. Because I do love the human body and what's underneath the skin.
Yes.
And it's amazing. You know how if you see that bodies exhibition?
Yes.
How all those different systems, because they show them all separately.
Yes.
how they all fit in the same body.
Yes.
That is amazing.
Yes.
And so just the skeletal structure and all of those things and the muscles and every system I've always been very interested in.
How they attach, because I do too. One of the reasons that I went to the Academy, the New York Academy of Art, which is one of the places that we went to see when we were in New York, is the reason they had specific anatomy courses. And so we were able to really get into how the body moves, why certain muscle structures are the way they are. It's because of how they move in order to do certain actions. And so it all was very fascinating to me. And it's like I being able to see somebody else who kind of has that, you know, passion for that same thing and just the way that they construct their work. I usually have I'm able to kind of narrow or zero in on something like that, and your work is one of those.
Thank you. I'm working on it. I've got a piece right now. My husband was looking at it, and he was like, wow, that's going to have to really come out, because I've got the hip that's already out this far, and then there's the baby's leg that's over that, and then the arm. He's like, that's going to come out far. I was like, it's going to come out 10 inches because that's where my frame box stops.
Right.
But it's coming out there.
Nice. Yeah.
But I've always been attached to the wall. I have not ever detached from the wall. I hope one day maybe that I do. I'd like to do work that you can walk all the way around, but I just have not. I am very attached to the wall.
I feel like the more you are getting further and further away from the wall,
we'll
I think your natural happens. Next step is to just have a piece that's fully in the round.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yes.
I mean, I envision it, and I would like to do one that people could crank that would move, an automaton, I think they're called. I was inspired by another artist here in Kentucky that had work in Susan Moorman's gallery.
Okay.
I love the interaction. I want people to interact with the work like I interacted with his and twirling it around. I thought, this is fun.
Yes. And I think it's really interesting that you say that you want people to interact, because the way that you construct the work already invites that. So you're like creating these spaces and atmospheres. It's more than just work that's on the wall. It really is an installation. And to me, it is interactive. I may not be able to touch it or feel it, but I really do feel like these people are somebody I can have a conversation with. Just the way that you're using your photography and your painting, the way that you're creating atmosphere, layering, it feels like I can literally walk into this space. I can talk to this person. She's life-size or nearly life-size. Excuse me. So it's already going in that direction.
Okay.
It's just like adding extra elements to actually physically interact would really, I think, enhance it as well. And then you're starting to do sound. So you're already thinking about all of these things.
It's just sound like and scent.
Natural progression.
One thing that was nice about being at KMAC was I could see when people were in the gallery, and I would go in all the time and talk to them, and I would see people touching the work. And so when I came out, then they would, you know, but I want them to be able to touch it with me controlling what they do touch, you know. So if there was cranks and things like that, then that would make it, because the flowers and things that I make are fragile.
Yes.
You know, they're not like metal.
Yes.
So I don't know why everybody wants to touch it.
Well, they still have that kind of quality that feels, like it feels inviting.
Yeah, I can tell.
It feels like something. And then you get curious as to how this is being made. And then you're curious as to like how
Right.
What
What's
does it
the material?
Feel like?
Yes. Yeah, because a lot of people ask that.
So I get the fascination, and I get the curiosity, and even the temptation. But it's like in those moments, I'm one of those people is like, I got to put my hands in my pockets so I don't touch it.
Right, because I grew up in museums.
Yes.
And so I know that. Yeah, sometimes my husband will get so close, it makes me even nervous. To show me a point, he'll be like this, and we'll be in a museum in the Met or somewhere, and I'm like, ah. Yeah, but I understand.
Because I've had the docents look at me like, you might want to back up, yes. Because I just get so close to see, like, what is this brush stroke looking like and whatnot. So I get the temptation, but I do control myself. But there are people who haven't grown up in those environments or who aren't, you know.
They're going to touch.
Yeah, they are.
I saw it.
It's like, you're not slick, but. But yes. So speaking of Mark, how did you guys meet?
So I brought this little article. So it was in the Courier Journal. I've got a number of articles, but I'm thinking it was this one. He was in the annual African American Artists Exhibition, and this was up on the wall. And of course, it could have been this one too. There weren't that many artists that were Black in the art department, there weren't that many Blacks, period. And, I mean, it was me. And then I saw the picture of him on the board. And so I read this article and I said, I've got to meet him. And so you asked how we met,
yeah.
Right? Okay, that's how we met. So I saw him and walking down the hallway and I asked him a question that I knew the answer to because I just wanted to meet him. And he didn't even look at me. I thought, what is wrong with this guy? He didn't even look up. So then he went into the gallery and I asked him another question. And I think he answered that. And then we went to Chicago on the the spring break trip. Mm-hmm. And there was another photographer, Keith Broadhurst, who was on the trip with us. And I asked him, did he know Mark? And he said, yes. I said, okay, just talk to him and let's talk, all three of us. And so that's basically how it all started. And I tell you, when I met him, when we got there, he drew the most beautiful picture. He came down to my room. And there were six of us girls in a room. Mm-hmm. We were in the Congress Hotel on Michigan Avenue. And six of us girls were in there, and he came down with his shy self, because he is shy, and he asked, could he draw me? So he sat on the bed of the next girl, because she got up, and he drew this picture of me in this hat that I was wearing. It was beautiful. So he did that, like, that was the first day there, or second, I think it was the first day. And so that was really special. No one had ever drawn me before. But my studio ended up being in the same room as his studio. Mm-hmm. So we ended up getting to know each other and spending a lot of time in the studio together.
Okay.
And became really good friends. My mother actually helped me to appreciate that he was more than a friend. Yeah, because she liked him too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Just having somebody be like a little push. Towards something that's just a little bit further than that.
Yes. And then as far as being married to an artist, mm-hmm. It's the perfect setup for me and Mark. Because you think about, like, for yourself, when you get out of grad school, do you still have that audience of people to crit your work or to give you feedback? Do
or
you still
even have support? That? It's like, yes and no, because we get busy, we don't have the same amount of time, you know, to mm-hmm. talk as friends, let alone talk as colleagues, you know. Mm-hmm. So if we do have the time to talk, usually we're catching up on life things,
right.
And we don't have time to talk about art, you know. Right. So we have to schedule specific time to do a, you know, a crit night or something like that, which happens few and far between, honestly, because we're just trying to keep up with one another and support one another mentally.
Right.
So, and since nobody's like around immediately as we're making things, it's a lot harder to, you know, kind of keep up that relationship because I might be making something immediately in the studio and then not be in the studio for months or a long time, maybe not months, but for a while.
Right.
And vice versa. We have day jobs, all kinds of things that, you know, kind of get in the way mm-hmm. of the creation. Mm-hmm. So when that happens, we're talking about other things,
right.
not necessarily the work.
Right.
And so, but when we do talk about the work, it's always something that is, that is helpful. And it's like, man, I miss this. I miss mm-hmm. being able to get together and have this goal and, you know, stick to it as we're talking to one another. Mm-hmm. But no, I could see how that would be quite helpful.
Right. So, our studios are adjacent to one another.
Mm-hmm.
There's no full walls. There's stairs that divide our space. Our space is in the basement. And so he can turn around if I don't have any artwork up, and he can see me and see the work. I've got work everywhere. And so is the case in his area. And I think one thing with us both being artists, we appreciate each other's time
mm-hmm.
as far as I work all day. I wake up at 6:30 every morning. And on the days that I'm doing my art, because I do have a very strict schedule, I will work from the morning on into the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
And my most productive hours are those hours that no one is talking to me, when I'm alone, when no one knows my name or is calling my name,
yes.
even for sometimes simple conversation.
Yes.
I mean, because I'm always concentrating on something that you can't see,
right.
you know, I might be thinking about the next piece, even though I'm working on something right here in front of me. So when we have exhibitions that need to be taken care of, we understand each other's time. Mark may say, I'm tired, I'm going to go to sleep. And I'm like, no, honey, you can't go to sleep. You've got this work you've got to get done.
Yeah.
You know, and vice versa. He'll right. say the same to me. So we respect each other's time and know that creativity is not necessarily a 9-to-5 thing. You have your 9-to-5 hours as an artist. It's,
yeah.
it's crucial to have a regular schedule. And to go in regardless of if you've got some grand master plan.
Right.
But also to recognize that at midnight is maybe the time that I really am focused on my work. Because
right.
I do a lot of work at night just because it's quiet.
Yeah.
And even the suggestion of someone possibly getting ready to call me.
Yes.
Kind of... it distracts me.
Yes.
You know, so being married to an artist, and then we create each other's work all the time. And the two of us are probably our toughest critics, you know, and which is good. So I go over and talk to him all the time about his work. He comes and talks to me, and that's good. We're not competitive. We work together like a well-oiled machine.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can tell, like, even during when we were all in New York together, I was like, you guys really compliment each other.
Well, thank you.
Because Mark really is, like, even as a professor, you can tell his quiet and shy nature. He's going to tell you the truth
mm-hmm.
about your work. He's not shy about that.
No, he's not.
But, as you know, it's also different seeing your professor in a social situation
uh-huh.
and to see you guys together. It's
probably
like
almost funny.
It does have some humor to it because of how different you guys are, but also where those differences actually boost one another.
Right, right.
And when the word synergy
uh-huh.
comes to mind when I think of you guys as a couple, of the fact that you really do, I think, bring out the best in one another too.
Oh, thank you.
So.
Yeah, that's why people always say, if he's not there, where's Mark? You know, because you normally, even my sister-in-law, she's like, well, where's Mark? Why is he? I'm like, I know we're never not apart, you know, never apart. So anyway, I'm so glad I read that article about him. I mean, because I don't think he would have looked up because he even ever met me, but it worked out well.
Yes, I'm glad that you took the initiative
yes.
because I don't think you
No, he wouldn't have. No.
What has it been like for you balancing a family? Because I know you have a family, like you and Mark have a son, right?
So I raised two children, two beautiful children. One's name's Balthus and the other's named Keturah. And Balthus was an artist, and Keturah is an artist too, a dancer. And she also speaks a foreign language. And, well, they both do. He did sign language and she did Spanish because she's done interpreting. But she does flamenco dancing. Well, I homeschooled my children. And so as regards my art career, so when I was pregnant, we got pregnant on my honeymoon, okay? And so when I had my baby, prior to having the baby, you know, you have these different ideas about what it's going to be like to be a parent. And if you were a parent, you would do this and that and the other. And one of the things that I always think is funny that I always tell ones is I saw this woman and she had her child on a leash. And I thought that was the most inhumane thing. How could she put her child on a leash? I would never do that. And so then, honey, I had my son. And Balthus was running all over the place. He was never with me. I mean, we would go into a store, shoom, he was gone. I was like, where are those leashes? You know, and so I got a leash. Now, Keturah was the exact opposite. I would think she was gone, but if I turned, she'd be at my leg. I turned this way, and, you know, she was right there.
No,
so they were so the opposite. But my thinking was so off kilter because I didn't have children. Okay, so once I had them, I went and got the leash. You know, I saw that life was going to be a lot different than I imagined it was going to be. I said I was going to strap my baby to my back and I was going to keep doing my art. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter was that when I strapped my baby to my back, I did not have an iota of an artistic thought in my mind. Mm-hmm. When he was tired, I was worn out. You know, my husband would come home from work because we moved to Florida and he started teaching there. And he was like, honey, you're going to be able to do your work. And I had just finished a commission for Brown-Forman. And it was an abstract piece with barrel stays. And you can see it if you drive down 18th Street. It's right there in the Greneau Center. You can see it there on 18th. When you look in these three concrete windows. But anyway, he'd come home and he'd say, honey, you can work now. I'd look at him and kind of laugh. But like, I haven't been thinking about creating anything. I think I'll go take a nap.
Yeah.
So so that was what life was like when he was young. And then he got a little bit older. Keturah came along. She's actually my niece. She's not my biological child, but I treated her and love her as if she is my own. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to her mom and I'll say my children, okay? So that's our relationship. But when Keturah came along, I started homeschooling them both. And when I think about, you had asked me the question, what would I tell my younger self? I would tell my younger self to continue to do what you're doing. Because I thought about all the choices that I made in life. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people like we read about Louise Nevelson, and she focused on her art. Mm-hmm. She had family, but she focused on her art.
Right.
I have family, but I felt like these little ones are not going to be little long.
Yes.
And I want to give them all I can. Yeah. So I became the best that I could be at teaching them in every subject. You know, I had to learn about everything in science and math and everything else and be excited about it. Yeah. Because I actually taught them. For history, we focused on the Underground Railroad and African-American history. That was our focus throughout school because me, as the one who came up with their curriculum, I could do that.
Yeah.
We traveled a lot, and so a lot of our educational experiences had to do with seeing the actual places and things such as that. What would I tell my younger self? Because sometimes as you go through those periods of time and you have children that sometimes don't always appreciate everything you do, and sometimes you may think, oh, I don't know that I should have done all of this.
Yeah.
But now that I'm older and I look back, I mean, I would I would regret it if I did not put a hold on my artistic career mm-hmm. and to focus on their lives and help to formulate who they would become. So I didn't give up art altogether. So I did like projects in the school system and I taught my kids how to do those projects. So we went to, is it Southern Middle School? I can't even remember the name of the school now. It's in the South End. There's this mural, it's 4x8 panels on the outside of the school. But my little girl, Keturah, was about this tall. And we're doing a mosaic, and she knew how to use the tiles, the little nippers. Mm-hmm. And so, she knew how to use the nippers to cut the tile. And so I'd have her over there teaching these students how to nip with the tiles, and he was teaching something else. And so we were doing art projects, and then, like, she had to, they both had to make a flamenco skirt. Mm-hmm. You know, so I tried to incorporate artistic things in their educational training, so I was still always connected, but not in that same type of focus.
Right.
So then they grew up and I focused on my husband's career, which was his paintings are on the Underground Railroad.
Yes.
So I do a lot of research. I like to read. And when the kids were in school, that was their focus and research. He heard it. And he said, wow, those are interesting stories. I said, you should paint about those. Yeah. So my focus has been on him. When you're an artist, you have to photograph your own work, write about the work, advertise yourself, create a website. It's too much.
It is.
And so, yeah. And so I did a lot of that and have continued to do a lot of that for Mark. But I decided that I was going to start focusing in on my own artwork again. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've done.
Wow.
I know, just personally, your story kind of even parallels, like, bring back my mom, because that's what she did, too. Rather than focusing on, because she was a librarian at the time, rather than focusing on her career, she quit her job to make sure I had her in my life, you know, that what you just said about, you know, we won't have these years again, as your child is growing up and kind of putting that first as your priority. Mm-hmm. So when I hear that, I just think about what my mom also did for me. And so it's like, you may not think that you appreciate it, until you get a little bit older, but then you also realize how much you needed them while they were there and how much you appreciate them being there. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to explain it. It might seem like we take y'all for granted, but at the same time, it's like, we know how much we needed you at the time. Mm-hmm. And even then, whether it was conscious or not, we knew and we were appreciative of you all being there.
Well, that's so nice of you to say.
I mean, I am talking about my personal experience, so I don't know. But
that is nice. It's nice. I mean, it's comforting for a mom, just speaking for all moms. Mm-hmm. Another thing was my husband was there, because being a professor, he only taught 2 days a week. He cooked breakfast for them. And I told them, this is not the norm that your dad is here cooking breakfast for you on, you know, Tuesdays and Thursdays mm-hmm. and Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays, because those were the days he didn't work, you know, or when he did a Monday, Wednesday off. I said, so really appreciate this, you know. And of course, they got to see him paint and draw, and that rubbed off on them, which was really nice, because they would see him working at home and in the studio. Yeah.
It sounds like they got a nice art education at home, so.
Mm-hmm. They did.
Yeah.
They did. They each did their foreign language. Like I said, she did he did ASL and her Spanish, and they each grew into really wonderful adults, so.
Yeah. Sounds like they had the right ingredients for it, so. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
This episode is sponsored by Wheelhouse Art, a contemporary art gallery whose mission is to make more art more accessible to more people. Located in Louisville, Kentucky's historic Crescent Hill neighborhood, Wheelhouse Art believes in the power of art to inspire, connect, and transform. Their exhibitions rotate every 6 weeks, showcasing incredible work by regional and national artists in a welcoming, approachable space that's free and open to the public. The Wine Room by J. Bell Wine Co. is proud to announce the opening of their newest tasting room in Louisville, Kentucky. A homecoming for their talented winemaker who was born and raised in this vibrant city. 6 years ago, she made the journey to Washington State to learn and craft wines for J. Bell, and now brings the heart of their winemaking philosophy back to her hometown. As a family-owned boutique winery, J. Bell is dedicated to small lot production and old world winemaking practices. Each bottle reflects their commitment to authenticity and craftsmanship, with a focus on single varietals and thoughtfully balanced blends. They embrace minimal intervention in the cellar, allowing their wines to speak for themselves. They use native yeast fermentation, and most of all, their wines are unfiltered and unfined, preserving their natural character and depth. This Louisville location not only celebrates their winemaker's roots, but also offers a new way to experience J. Bell's Washington-grown wines in an intimate, community-driven setting. Whether you're a seasoned wine lover or new to the world of handcrafted wines, you're invited to taste the story behind every glass, where tradition, place, and passion meet. Welcome to The Wine Room by J. Bell Wine Co. Louisville.
I am taking it back a little bit because I actually forgot to talk about it before. Okay. One of the things in your artwork that I found really compelling was your photography. Mm-hmm. Because it felt almost like photojournalistic, but like you're putting your own, not really putting a new spin on it. It's really more like truth-telling, mm-hmm. but from a different lens, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, and we've kind of touched on this conversation before, but a lot of times, especially in the media, especially in Western media, what happens is they kind of spin things to make it seem a certain way rather than telling what's actually there. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they do show what's actually there, but through a headspace that's overtly, you know, racist and degrading. And one of the things that I like about your work is the sensitivity to truth and also how we can connect with these people. They're real people living their actual lives, doing these tasks that are either, you know, the same as what we do here. Right. Like I said, there's a piece where you have the women in the sewing shop. Mm-hmm. The piece that has the woman getting her hair braided, mm-hmm. you know, and that has like the packs of hair.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
oh my goodness, piece.
It's like, yeah. It's like, okay. No, we're not used to having our hair braided outside, but we still understand that, you know, experience.
Yes.
You absolutely. Know, being in a beauty salon or whatever, uh-huh. or being in your friend's house and she's braiding your hair.
Right, right.
So I just thought that, and then like the cityscape scenes, mm-hmm. like showing, you know, the dichotomy between village and cityscape, but also in the village scenes, they're not... they're not deprived of mm-hmm. anything, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's still a lot of dignity in the work. And I think that it's important to kind of talk about that, especially because you're viewing the world from a lens that isn't a white Eurocentric place.
Right.
So,
and so when I first went, I have a couple of memories. Every time I've gone to take these pictures, not because I was planning on displaying them anywhere. They're just capturing moments that are my memories, that the things that stand out to me that are important. But as time has gone on, I keep looking at all of these images, and there's so many of them that I want to do. There's so many images, just architecture I'm really interested in, the hustle and bustle of the streets, but then just individuals and how beautiful they are to me and their everyday lives and capturing those moments. But when I went to Africa through Parsons School of Design, and we were in Côte d'Ivoire, we were in Abidjan, maybe we were on our way to Ségou. Anyway, we were driving down the road, and there was this billboard, and the billboard was of Marlboro cigarettes. And in Africa, at the time, they didn't have to display the warning sign. So everything that could no longer be sold in the United States was being sold there as far as these death sticks and mm-hmm. cigarettes and without warnings. So somebody in the class on the bus said, well, that's stupid. Africans wouldn't understand that. Yeah, you and my head turned. You know, the IQs or brain, the capacity for learning is no different for anybody in any part of the world. And yet that biased opinion, where did that come from?
Right.
There's a lens that we see on the news. And of course, we see that here. If you turn on YouTube and you click on news, it's going to be whatever is the most shock and awe. And that's all that's going to be focused on. I was talking to my mother about Ukraine yesterday. My mother speaks Russian and has a lot of friends that speak Russian and speak Ukrainian. She has some friends that have gone back to Ukraine. I'm not understanding why they're going back to Ukraine. Because what do we see on the news every day? We see warfare. Mm-hmm. Well, I said, well, how big is Ukraine? And so mom said, I don't know. So I looked this morning on the map. Well, it would cover Kentucky, half of Ohio, West Virginia, and a couple of other states, mm-hmm. half of those states. So that means that just like for us, what's going on in Northern Kentucky, we don't know. And it doesn't touch us, mm-hmm. nor West Virginia over there, unless it's on the news. So sometimes the one thing that may be happening in Kentucky in the West End mm-hmm. becomes blown up so much that it can become national, if not international news. And that's the only thing you know about that place. But that is not what that place is all about. Mm-hmm. So I found that to be the case with Africa. So the view that we have that everybody's starving, everybody's got malaria, everybody's in a village, mm-hmm. that nobody has
technology,
that's what I'm saying, nobody has a phone, is the furthest thing from the truth. And so that's why I like doing the cityscape so much. The hustle and bustle, the energy that's in the city. They have, you know, we have Kmart here. They have OKmart. Mm-hmm. That's what it's called. It looks the same. It is the same. They have McDonald's. They have Kentucky Fried Chicken. They have all of those things. But we only see one little picture. And so a lot of times you say you're going to Africa, they think it's one country.
Yes.
Which is not the case.
Yes.
Each one of these 54 countries are unique, that make up a continent. And I remember being in the art department, and when we did a survey course of art history, they had one little chapter that was African art. Then the Egyptian art is much bigger, mm-hmm. as if Egypt is not a part of Africa. Mm-hmm. It's one of those countries that should have all been there together.
Right.
So, you know, then there's the Middle East. Well, where is that? You know, when you look on the map, you see that within the continent of Africa, this top right section over here is called the Middle East. So people don't even understand the dynamics of just the geographical location of places. So for me, it's been nice to be able to experience, photograph, and show a different lens, a positive lens. I understand there's problems everywhere. I absolutely understand. I am not blind to that, and I'm not trying to be blind to that. But along with the negatives in our lives, we try to focus on the positives.
Right.
Any normal person does.
Right.
They focus on hope. You know, they focus on what they see, hopefully the cup half full.
Right.
And those are the kinds of things that I want to show from my experiences when I've been there. Yeah, those are things I'm interested in. And I do keep in contact with people that I've met on my trips from all different economic brackets.
Yeah.
And the people that I'm in contact with are happy people. Not that they have had trouble-free lives. They were affected by the last, and this is a group, a number of people affected by, they had a drought.
Mm-hmm.
They were affected by that. Just as, you know, we're affected here when we have flooding. You know, but they overcame that and moved on. There's new challenges that we'll face. But that's my impetus in my work, is to try to share a different lens, a positive lens of Africa. People have seen some of the images when I'm printing them out. If they don't see the name, they think that, like the picture of one of the pieces, they think that that's San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, that's Zimbabwe. That's mm-hmm. downtown Zimbabwe. And I'm like, what? You know, because they see cars, they see all these skyscrapers and all this, you know, right. congestion and energy and all of that, you know. So that's what I'm focused on.
I like the joy that comes through in your work as well. And I think that that's also something that's important to tie into just the Black experience, because mm-hmm. so much and so often our pain and struggle is pushed to the forefront and often monetized in a way that's icky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I do like seeing those moments of joy and reality, and this is a person who is multidimensional. And these are people who are multidimensional. And their stories are being shared by someone who sees them as their full selves rather than this horrible thing that happened to them. Mm-hmm. Or this, you know, this idea of what they should be from, you know, the Western perspective. So it's important, I think, to view your work and to see that, because there's strength and dignity in it, but also inviting the viewer to just, you know, be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what is so powerful about the work. All of that comes through, and I appreciated being able to walk through that space and feeling those feelings and being able to sit with them, because they are important. You're telling a very important story.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, I've enjoyed what I'm doing. And my experiences are all joyful. I remember some years ago, I can't remember his name either, but he was saying, why don't you paint about something that disturbs you? Like that. I don't want to paint about anything that disturbs me. I want to paint about things that bring me joy. I mean, there is a disturbing aspect to the fact that this is not what I grew up knowing. If you want me to feel disturbed about something,
right.
You know, but I'm more interested in awareness as opposed to being angry about what is not or what was not. I can't change that. But what I can do is broaden my lens of understanding and share what I'm learning with you. I'm not trying to change the world or anything like that, but just to open my eyes, and while opening my eyes, share what I have learned and how it makes me feel you know, with those that come in contact with my work and mm-hmm. those that I come in contact with as well.
I think it's interesting that you say you're not trying to change the world, but the way to change the world is through connection and, or I'll say a way to change the world is through connection and sharing experience and knowledge with people who are receptive to it, you know?
That's a small amount of people, because as long as I've lived, I think about back to the 60s. And then I think back to Breonna Taylor.
Yes.
And I see the same thing happening then that is happening now.
Yes.
I do not see any difference. And so all these efforts from people to try to change things, I mean, we've got the same mental attitude for many people. So it's not like I'm saying, well, can't do anything. But what I'm saying is I don't expect those kinds of results. Mm-hmm. But do what I do hope is that I share a positive lens with those that I do come in contact with.
Right.
Yeah.
And was art something that you were always interested in? And, like, did you grow up with art in your home?
Okay.
I know some people do, some people don't. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering how was creativity, you know, kind of that thing that resonated with you?
Okay. So my mother was a voice major in school. She's got a beautiful voice. She has operatic voice. I didn't get that voice. My sister's got a strong voice. And then my dad was a professor at U of L. And so I've got that very analytical side. I'm a lot like my dad. Mom would say, yes, she is. But I'm also artistic. Mom put me in some acting classes when I was a child. She said she wanted me to blossom or something. I don't know if I was shy at one point. I don't know. But when the class was finished, she asked the teacher how I did at acting, and she said, well, she did really good at set design. And so I wasn't an actress, but that set design obviously moved her to kind of like buy me the paper toll set. Since Dad worked at U of L, the speed at that time was free. Mm-hmm. And when she would get off from work, because she ended up teaching LD and EMH in Fort Knox. But by the time she would get me, we would still have time left. And so we would go to the speed every day. So I would go to the speed ever since I was a little girl. And I was at U of L. I've got video of me pulling my dad all around U of L. Yeah. Even next to the art building before they had the fountains and the whole thing up there.
Yes.
Yeah, I've got video of me pulling him around as like a little girl. so I've been around art all my life. I appreciate art, and I'm one that will go to the museum and read every little bit of information that is there.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is definitely, I do have a background in just engulfing art. And then Mom, they would, the speed used to have it, I think it was the speed, where you could rent artwork. Mm-hmm. And so she would rent some pieces and bring them home, and then you could actually rent to buy them. And so we have some pieces that we rented and bought.
Didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, it was years and years ago when I was a little girl. Yeah, they had that. So yeah, so we have art in the home. Mm-hmm. And I was intrigued by what my mother did just with teaching her students, and she would do little art projects. You know, she'd draw these faces that you could turn and change the nose and whatnot, mm-hmm. the different features. And I was intrigued by that and impressed when I found that she had done, because I found that as a child. But I also was real interested in rocks and polishing rocks. Things that glitter.
Yes.
That I've always been attracted to, like quartz and all of that. Yeah.
Wow. So. It makes sense then, mm-hmm. that you would be an artist, honestly.
Right.
Yeah, and designer.
And then with the work that I'm doing, like the one you were talking about with the flowers, I'm I'm trying to get everything, different kind of thing, just crammed into this little space so that it's really active. And you, as you're looking, you're always finding something new and interesting to look at. And I've got beads sewn on them. I've got butterflies, all different kinds of things that are in there to keep your eye moving through the piece. And it's all just a vestige of some part of my life as I've grown up, really. It all has something to do with something that I have come in contact with.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I have started incorporating a lot of different craft techniques. I'm very interested in craft, particularly utilitarian items that are beautiful, that are considered craft, and taking those skills that I've learned and creating fine art pieces. So right before I started my residency at KMAC, I came in contact with this. I found this in my laundry room, and I had forgotten about it. And this is actually made with beads. It's paper beads. And so I got on YouTube and learned how to make paper beads. And so they said that bead making can be addictive. I didn't understand. I thought that's weird that they keep saying that. And so let me show you. This is just a little bit of a zillion beads that I ended up making. And so what I did was I copied this design, and for one of the pieces in the exhibition called Priceless, I made her top. You know, it's out of this, these beads, and out of this design.
Yes.
And so, like I said, I really like art that is made, that is utilitarian. It's something that you can use, something you can sit on, a stool, you can wear it. You know, it, for me, designing clothing, that craft became art, and one-shot piece. It wasn't like replicating the same thing over and over and over again. And so I love doing this. And then this is an example on the one piece that you were talking about. This is paper toll. And I decided to start incorporating flowers because you'll see I have a lot of ones that are people mm-hmm. or cityscapes. But I started incorporating flowers for the respect for the traditional paper toll process because they use a lot of flowers. But they don't use a lot of layers.
Okay.
So that's where my work diverges or separates from the traditional craft of paper toll, which they would actually frown on what I'm doing is creating all these layers mm-hmm. because I should be able in their mind to create the form with maybe three or four layers and be done. And so you, a lot of times you'll see, you know, real shallow paper toll. It's like this deep in a shadow glass box, mm-hmm. you know, but my piece is like the one entitled Umbrellas that's in that show at KMAC. When you go in there, the umbrellas piece is 50 layers. And so with traditional toll, if they only have a few layers, now I've got 50. And then what can I do to kind of honor the craft? I thought, let me start adding in the traditional flower. Yet this flower takes about 8 to 12 hours to make just that little piece.
I can see so why.
I invest a lot of time. And so my goal will be to try to get two pieces done in a day mm-hmm. that look like that. And so a lot of times I'll paint them or coat them. One of the things I like to use is UV nail polish mm-hmm. and put it under the light that you put your fingers under. I like all those types of processes and techniques and them using them all to make one thing.
Right.
I just, it's just a lot of fun. So, that's a little bit of the many different processes I use. I just saw some hair art, and I'd like to incorporate that too. But mm-hmm. it takes a long time to do hair art.
I've seen some pieces that are so intricate.
Yes.
Because they're just like fine So it's like, wow.
Yeah. So I have to restrain myself.
Yes.
Because there's so many things I want to add into each piece that I have to restrain myself. So in the future. And so I keep a notebook and write everything down. I have different notebooks that I write things down in so that I can revisit those ideas. Because there comes a time for every artist that you have a dry spell, just like a writer.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll have writer's block. And you just may have a dry spell. And I'm not one that wants to keep painting the same thing, different versions of the same thing. That is not my interest at all.
Yeah.
But sometimes you'll forget what that idea was. So I look back at those. And so I will definitely do hair in the future.
Yes.
I'm going to add mirrors in the future. There's other things that I want to do, you know. So keeping that notebook.
Yes.
Do you keep a notebook?
I have a notes on my phone, and then I have scribblings in different places that need to be in one place.
Yeah.
But I do have different ideas for different projects scattered.
Hey, fashion lovers, have you heard? One of Louisville's most beloved boutiques just made shopping smarter and easier. Margaret's Fine Consignments, a local favorite since 1991, has just launched their brand new website. Now you can browse their thoughtfully curated collection of pre-owned designer pieces, from Anthropologie and Free People to Lilly Pulitzer and Lululemon, all from the comfort of your own home. Whether you're after timeless classics or trendy finds, the new online store makes it simple to shop by brand or size and support sustainable fashion while you do it. So why wait? Visit margaretsconsignment.com to shop smart, shop sustainably, and shop local. And if you're in town, stop by the store at 2700 Frankfort Avenue, open 7 days a week. The Wine Room by J. Bell Wine Co. in Louisville is more than just a tasting destination. It's a full sensory experience. In addition to their curated wine tasting experiences and the by the glass or bottle service, they're excited to offer a thoughtfully crafted small bites menu from their in-house chef. Designed to complement their old world style wine, the menu features locally sourced seasonal ingredients that highlight flavors that enhance the nuances of each pour. Inside, guests can enjoy guided tasting experiences in a dedicated space where reservations are encouraged, though they gladly welcome walk-ins if space allows. For a more relaxed vibe, their expansive outdoor patio offers the perfect setting to sit and savor with friends while taking in the charm of Frankfort Avenue. The patio is reserved for by the glass or bottle service, providing a laid-back atmosphere ideal for lingering over a favorite wine and a few delicious bites. Whether you're a seasoned wine enthusiast or just discovering J. Bell Wine Co., the Wine Room invites you to explore their wines, enjoy locally inspired fare, and connect with the heart of their winemaking story, all in a warm, welcoming Louisville setting.
So these are some examples of a moth and a butterfly. And these are painted as well as layers. And so this is paper toll. Like, is that a Luna moth, I think?
Mm-hmm.
This is really good. I wonder, does it have a name?
It does.
Maybe we should name it Leisha. And here's another one. So all of the insects and the flora and the fauna is all native to Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I'm doing something from a different area, it's, you know, will be from that area. anyway.
Actually, something you said triggered another thing that I kind of just want to talk about real fast. Okay. And that's the whole art versus craft thing.
Uh-huh.
I also am a ceramic artist. I also, you know, draw and paint. And so when it comes to this whole idea of fine art being here and craft being down here because it's utilitarian, it gets me, actually it makes me angry because who said and why is that? And then it gets me thinking about, you know, who traditionally is considered the fine artist and who's traditionally considered a craft person and what is traditionally considered craft. And oftentimes it's woman's work is mm-hmm. what's considered craft and mm-hmm. high art is, you know, paintings by the masters who are usually white European men. So mm-hmm. I'm just like to see somebody and to also kind of have that same idea of no, this is fine art
mm-hmm.
and craft is there's the reason why you master your craft,
right? Everybody,
exactly.
Everybody does.
You have to put in the hours just as much as a painter puts in the yeah. hours, but you also are a painter. But you know what
right.
I mean.
Well, what's interesting is that painting and sculpture used to be categorized historically as decorative arts.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that would go in an interior space that adorned that space was called decorative art. But then somehow decorative arts is viewed as lesser than
yes.
what's now called fine art that used to be called decorative art. I mean, it's just a label.
Right.
And so I appreciate the beauty that can be found in whatever it's labeled as. I do choose to pick things that are considered as craft to utilize in my work. I do purposely do that because those are the techniques that intrigue me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can use all of these techniques. I mean, just like we learn techniques on how we're going to paint. You know, you can paint with a brush. You can paint with a what do you call that, scalpel?
Goodness. Palette knife.
Palette knife. Scalpel. I can paint with a scalpel.
It's a knife.
I use scalpels in my work.
Right.
When I cut
when
the
you
flowers.
Cut, yes.
Yeah. You know, this is all of the part of the craft that we learn.
Yes.
It's a necessary thing. And so I appreciate the fact that I am not confined by whatever the world says is what they validate or qualify as being fine art.
Right.
And for me to use the things that they say are not fine art to create fine art is just another challenge for me that I enjoy. So let me see what I can find out there that is considered by the majority just a craft,
right.
which would actually in effect decrease its value somehow in the minds of many.
Right.
You know, but some of these techniques and just the paper towel
yes.
that I learned, I invest so much time and effort into what I do
right.
to
and
create.
You can see the effort and time that you
yeah,
put into it.
That and putting all of this together to create what I consider to be fine art. I mean, I don't think it should be questioned. I think, yeah, so I think that it used to be more of a demarcation that used to be than there is now. I think that more different things are melded together.
Yes.
It's called mixed media than ever before in history, which can be a good thing for me. I mean, I think with some of the most current art movements, beauty is not important. It's the message behind the work. But for me, beauty is important. I mean, it is. It will always be important. And so my aim is to share my views and what I hope to portray through the work. But I want it to draw you in because it's tactily enticing you and pulling you in, not because you're repulsed by it, you know. And so that's the interest that I have, no matter what technique that I'm using, you know. So, and it's just my interest in art is not just on European art.
Right.
Those are not my main influences. I can't say that I was in the museum since I was a little girl, but if someone were to ask me, it's going to be African. It's going to be African or some other. I love Japanese art. I mean, there's a whole lot of things that I really love, but I can't say it all starts with a European lens.
Right.
And that's why I choose the colors I choose or what. No. No. Yeah, it's a lot of things are connected to Africa. Yeah, or intuitive.
Yes. Which you are connected to Africa.
Right, so exactly.
Your intuition is also right. So, yes. Thank you again for sitting and talking with us. And
thank you.
You know, I truly enjoy your work. If you can just repeat how long the work is up, the name of the show, and where. I know it's a game, but
okay. Yeah. So the show is entitled I Am We. So it's a body of work that has to do with my time in Zimbabwe, but the focus is on women and the daily life of women is really more of the focus in this show, because I do spend a lot of time on cityscapes, but you only see one, I think, in the exhibition, two maybe. The exhibition is up until August 17th. It is at KMAC Museum. That is at 715 West Main Street. So it's right before the Science Center. And it's open Tuesday through Sunday from 10 to 5. So hopefully you can come. Everybody can come and see the show, as you did come already.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's definitely worth seeing again.
Well, thank you.
Honestly. Yeah. And yes, I hope that any and everyone who's listening will come out and support and see the show.
Absolutely. Thank you. I hope they do too.
Yes. Thank you, Leisha.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Wheelhouse Arts, Art by Volume, presented by The Wine Room by J. Bell Wine Co. and hosted by me, Robin Elise Gibson. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I'd also like to give a special thanks to our sponsors and wonderful guests. If you'd like to share any of your thoughts, comments, questions, or insights, send us an email to abv.wheelhouse.art. We'd love to hear from you. I'd also like to give a special congratulatory shout out to Leisha Priest, who was awarded the prestigious Bill Fisher Award for Visual Arts since the recording of this podcast. And for more on Leisha and her show I Am We, check out her feature in the Voice Tribune. Congratulations, Leisha. I couldn't be more proud. ABV is more than just a podcast. It's a celebration of creativity, expression, and the art that connects us all.